Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. It's Travis, and today we are going to be talking about President Biden's very mixed legacy on student loans. We're going to be talking about what it means for the future, and I think this is going to be a really interesting episode because, gosh, so many things have happened in the past 4 years about student loans that if you told me that this was going to happen when I first started doing this back in 2016, I would not have believed you. I mean, it's just really been the most chaotic year for student loans, both in a good and bad way this past 4 years. And, you know, we're going to be looking at more chaos for the future. The good news is we're all on the same big battleship together, trying to face this chaos and save as much money as possible and achieve as many of your dreams as possible, and not letting these ridiculous student loans and the chaos around the system get in the way of what you want to achieve in life. So that's really important. The mission hasn't changed, but I think it'd be a little cathartic to talk through a little bit of where we have been with student loans the past 4 years and what it means going forward. So I want to go back, if you can remember, all the way back to 2020. If you remember when President Biden won and how he won, what happened was you had a lot of chaos in the Democratic primary, and you had a lot of disagreement between the progressive wing, which was ascendant in early 2020, right? You had Senator Warren, Senator Sanders. You had very, very progressive types of positions coming out of that wing of the party. And then you had this like centrist lane that was just in chaos. It was going to be, at the time, Senator Harris was kind of a front runner, but then she crashed and burned. And then you had Pete Buttigieg, but he was kind of viewed as not having enough experience as a mayor to be the presidential candidate nominee. And then you had Senator Biden, who did absolutely terrible in Iowa and New Hampshire in the 2020 primary, and really was selected kind of as a default paint whatever you want to paint on him type of pick that the party made in the South Carolina primary. So you remember Jim Clyburn, who was one of the top House Democrats, the electorate, then Democratic Party in South Carolina is heavily African-American. A lot of folks were looking to him as one of the senior African-American lawmakers in the country. People were looking to him as, hey, who should we pick? Who should we support in the South Carolina primary? He said, let's go with Vice President Biden. Let's make him our candidate. And then he won in a big shocker in South Carolina. And then he became the nominee in 2020. But Biden was very knowledgeable that he did not have this huge base of support independently. He was sort of a pick, a default pick, right? And so he needed to make sure that he had political support from the base of his party, the progressive base. And so he essentially needed to make a peace treaty with Senator Sanders and Senator Warren. And why is this relevant? Why does this matter for student loans? I'm getting there, I promise. As part of this sort of peace treaty with Senator Sanders and Warren, the idea was, okay, Biden, you're going to govern a lot more progressively than you might have otherwise done, and you're going to let us fill the administration with a lot of our allies and folks that we think will do a good job, you know, across the government, a lot of people in agencies and such. And in doing that, essentially, you know, Biden was sort of committing to be in the center of the Democratic Party, which is kind of always where he had been over the course of his career, right? And the Democratic Party was definitely going very much to the left in 2020. And so, you know, he wanted to make sure that he was in that middle of the Democratic Party, and making that sort of treaty, if you will, with the Sanders-Warren wing of the party. One of the things that was traded was extremely progressive policy on student loans and education in general. And so let me explain what I mean by that. So if you recall, when he was staffing up in 2020, he actually put a huge number of folks that would be sort of considered ideologically allied with the Sanders-Warren wing of the party in at Department of Education. So you had a lot of people placed into very key roles at Department of Education, kind of foreshadowing what they might do at Department of Education on student loans. One example is Rich Cordray. He's actually, as the FSA chief operating officer, he's the person that's supposed to run the student loan program. He was, to my knowledge, the first transparently political appointee to that position. And what I mean by that is he was sort of a person that was very much associated with the CFPB and a very, you could call someone that was mentored by Senator Warren. So it was somebody that was very clearly, hey, we're telegraphing, we're taking this student loan stuff super seriously. And then so he was put in over at Department of Ed for the student loan portfolio. And then a whole bunch of folks were put in that were, you know, just a lot of very talented lawyers, a lot of consumer advocate type folks, really put into a lot of decision-making authority at Ed. One of the things that I remember very clearly in 2020 is James Cavall was chosen for deputy undersecretary for higher ed at Department of Ed. And this is a guy that's like center left, you know, very, you maybe even say would say centrist. He's very moderate, very much a policy wonk, good government type of Democrat. I would put him very much in the Obama Clinton sort of moderate technocrat kind of wing of the party. And he was chosen for this key role where he could have caused a ton of problems for doing a lot of expansive stuff on student loans if he wanted to. Remember that Senator Warren held up his nomination and blocked his nomination for an extended period of time. My guess as to that is, you know, I think that Senator Warren is brilliant and her team is brilliant. And I think that they knew that he could potentially be a problem for some of the things they were hoping to accomplish over at Ed. My guess is that some backroom deals were struck and some, you know, promises were extracted that he would not interfere in a lot of the stuff on the student loan programs and, you know, what he was going to do basically. And so he got approved for his role. I think that was a critical role because he is a very, like I said, very technocratic expert kind of person that knows how to pull all the different policy levers for student loans. I think that what happened is you have to also think about what happened about the way they set up all of these programs. So at the end of 2020, Senator Warren's office sends a letter to Department of Ed basically asking, tell me a bunch of data about Department of Ed and give me a lot of data on borrowers and tell me all this stuff publicly. And the way it was phrased was essentially, hey, I want you to define time and repayment as amount of years somebody has been in any repayment plan plus forbearance, deferment, et cetera, and count that based off of whatever loan they have that's the oldest. So in other words, she asked a very specific question that was almost kind of like a leading question to get data back to very much lay the groundwork for the IDR account adjustment. It was actually really brilliant. And what they did was they made it look like, which is true, that, you know, 4 million people had been in repayment for at least 20 years on their loans, and it was billions and billions of dollars that people had been in repayment for that long. But the thing that wasn't explained was that, you know, obviously if you have a loan that you took out from your undergrad and you've had it for a long time, and then you go back for a graduate degree or take out loans for your kids, and then you have a bunch of debt from an unrelated program or unrelated even person with Parent PLUS loans, then that report was going to show you as being in repayment for 20 years, even though the average time in repayment on a weighted average basis of your loans might have been, you know, a few years. And so what they did was take a very real problem, which was people not getting discharges for student loan forgiveness, which I'm not saying that's not a problem. But what I'm saying is they were geniuses in the way they like laid the groundwork for all these executive actions. I mean, it was like totally black belt level skill. And they defined the problem, which is, hey, look at how many years people have been in repayment. It's really, really bad. We have to do something to fix it. What happened is Biden, you know, got into office, and what he did right away was issue another student loan pause. And this one was a grande student loans pause instead of, was it venti? Is that 20? Maybe it's venti student loan pause. It was a 9-month pause until September 2021. So right away saying essentially, hey, I'm backing the truck up in terms of how generous I'm going to be. And then they did the American Rescue Plan. Recall that this was the big bill right away in March of 2021, I think, that made student loan forgiveness tax-free because that was cited as a big obstacle to getting student loan cancellation. That provision was gotten into the bill by Senator Warren's office, again, showing how critical she has been to all the programs the Biden administration has done on student loan relief. That got passed. Now the obstacles to cancellation are out of the way. They are gone, right? And one thing about accomplishing things through executive action, if they had come out right away, tried to cancel a bunch of debt, that probably would have gotten gummed up and then nothing would have gotten accomplished. And so what they did instead was something that was also super genius. The folks at Department of Ed basically said, what can we do to start making progress right away on student loan relief? And what they did is they coordinated with certain media programs to lay the groundwork for the PSLF waiver. Now, that was what a great place to start because it's pretty difficult to, you know, come out legally suing right away super hostily against, hey, look at all these military members who have not gotten PSLF despite serving our country for years, right? That would be politically a really bad idea, right? And so that's exactly what happened. The CBS 60 Minutes program had on a bunch of military folks that had fell loans for a long time. They didn't get that forgiveness, and they were highlighting that broken problem, and it was a huge feature of that program that day. And, you know, the thing, of course, that they don't mention is that the folks who wrote the bill, a lot of whom were in the administration, intentionally wrote it in a defective way because they had to please the CBO. CBO has to score how much bills cost. In 2007, if they had made FFELP loans qualify for PSLF, the bill would have been enormously expensive. So instead, they got the consolidation rule into the bill to allow people to convert it from FFELP loans to direct loans. But they intentionally did not make FFELP loans qualify because they knew the cost would be too high and they wouldn't be able to pass the bill. Then, of course, you had the predictable result of the PSL program being broken because the folks who wrote it broken intentionally because they had to because of CBO, which is why a lot of things that folks want don't get passed. So anyways, so this stuff was broken. It was a broken bill, even though it was done intentionally. Broken law, I mean, with the PSL program, right? It is a total mess. And so they were like, hey, we've got an easy way to fix this mess. If you consolidate, we're going to count any kind of repayment program. We'll count, you know, the oldest loan as if it's the newest loan, right? We'll count the oldest loan credit on the whole thing. We'll allow FFELP loans to get this forgiveness. And that was extraordinarily generous. And so you just started to see that PSLF waiver stuff getting going. And what they did effectively is, I think that the Biden administration folks were very torn as to what their messaging should be going into the midterms. So you're going into the midterms. I remember reading the New York Times at the time, and there was a big, broad call for President Biden to be the most transformational, progressive president since FDR. And there was a lot of folks in the New York Times and other periodicals that were saying, you know, Biden needs to be a New Deal level president. And I remember one article in particular was like, Biden's vision for government, cradle to grave support from the government or something like that. It was like a New York Times like analysis piece. And it was essentially saying that this is the great society moment. This is a, you know, an opportunity, a once in a generation opportunity to completely rewrite the social contract, to provide minimum income for families with kids, to make sure children don't have, you know, minimize child poverty, to drastically expand SNAP benefits for food, to dramatically enhance like Medicare and Affordable Care Act protections and things like that. It was very transformational, right? And then the capstone, I would say like the peak of the progressive like legislative movement in the Biden administration was leading up to, you know, Build Back Better. And remember, the Build Back Better program was going to create benefits for home health care. It was going to, I think, raise taxes a lot to reduce inequality. It was a lot of like very important progressive priorities that were stuffed into this bill. And then at the last second, moderate senators doomed it. So folks like Senator Manchin, I think Sinema, and others doomed this bill. And the Biden administration had telegraphed for months, student loans are going to restart January 2022. They're going to start in early 2022. That was something that was repeated over and over and over again to borrowers. And so borrowers are really getting ready to go into repayment again with the existing loan programs that had existed already, like Pay, Repay, IBR. They were going to start making payments in January 2022. But when Build Back Better failed, and I think it failed near the end of 2021 or something like that, folks were furious about it. You know, I mean, this was very important policy that progressives really, really wanted. And when that program failed, it was really, really upsetting to a lot of folks. And people were looking for a sacrificial lamb. And on student loans, that was a really easy thing to look at and say, the president can extend the pause, he needs to extend the pause, right? And there was tons of pressure, and the Biden administration decided, okay, instead of January, we are just going to pull that lever and extend the pause yet again. Then once you made it super clear, hey, we're going to start payments, and then you pull that and reverse it in the very last second, all the credibility the administration had of when they were going to start went out the window, and approaching a midterm election, they no longer could have an easy opportunity to restart payments, and so they got stuck. What they did is, well, let's think about what we should do, both in what we think is policy right and also politically, what should we do? And what happened is you got the IDR to count adjustment. And I remember this, I think it was April 2022, I think. The announcement came out and it essentially said, you know, this could save at least 2 million borrowers, at least a few billion dollars or something like that. And it was the most understated, some might say intentionally misleading statement I've ever seen on student loans, because it was essentially taking those 4 million people that had been in repayment for 20 years that had, you know, 100 something billion in debt and saying, if you consolidate, all that's gone, right? Because you've been in repayment for 20 years in undergrad, 25 years on grad, plus people could get massive years credited to their future. So this was a huge program. And this, shockingly to me, was not blocked. And this, I think, had a much easier path to being blocked than the PSLF waiver did, simply because people with FFELP loans, states with FFELP loans, this is a massive incentive to consolidate those FFELP loans and have them, all that future interest income, cut off. And nobody sued. I was floored. I was really thinking somebody was going to sue on this, and they never did. That was pretty shocking to me when they announced the IDR account adjustment and then nothing happened. And then after several months of nothing happening, it's like, oh, this is real. This is really going to stick. I remember, too, as they just kept doing those student loan pause extensions, they kind of kept doing them like 3 months at a time after that January 2022 one. And I remember, I think it was the chief of staff, Ron Klain, went on Pod Save America and said essentially that we are tying the restart of student loan payments to cancellation. We are not going to restart this broken system until we have, you know, reform and we have cancellation or some sort of program to help borrowers. And so that was the first time when it was like, oh, wow, they're going to make huge changes on this. And they did. They got together a negotiated rulemaking committee. They got together folks to go over the regulations in detail to figure out, you know, what should be the new system of student loans. So we had the PSLF waiver, the IDR account adjustment, and then they decided, let's come up with the SAVE plan. But that was actually even after, I should mention cancellation first. They announced cancellation on student loans right before the midterms in like the summer of 2022. They designed it in a way where it was like you could get $10,000 if you were under a certain income level, and then $20,000 if you had a Pell Grant. A whole bunch of people were going to get the $20,000, and basically almost everybody qualified for the $10,000 just because of the way they defined the income tests. And so when you're saying canceling $10,000 to $20,000, the cost came in at about $400 billion. Finally, the Republicans decided to sue over this, which was shocking to me because, again, I would have thought, okay, if these people are ideological, they would sue to block the IDR account adjustment, but they didn't. And so that, to me, made it seem like, well, progressives are just running circles around conservatives on student loans because conservatives just don't pay attention to the technical bureaucratic kind of stuff, maybe like progressives do. That was just my assumption was, well, you know, Democrats are just elite at student loan policy and conservatives just don't care. And then the cancellation stuff, that was the first time where it's like, okay, $400 billion is showing up as the top line item in the budget deficit report. Now suddenly conservatives care. And I think that they viewed this as a political opportunity to hurt moderate Democrats and win more seats. So I think that that's really what the political idea behind it was. If you think about, you know, a lot of folks like John Tester, Montana senator there, folks just that were in moderate districts did not support the cancellation program. They even some of them made statements very clearly that they didn't support the cancellation program. There's a Congresswoman Guzenkamp Perez who's won a Trump district, a Trump leaning district. She's a Democrat, and she was one of the people that came out against cancellation. So I think Republicans saw this opportunity to sue over cancellation as a way to hurt moderate Democrats and maybe swing some seats or majority of Congress even their way. So I think that's why they decided to sue over it. And the IDR account adjustment, I think, is so wonky. They just didn't see a political payoff and try to block that. So we saw this lawsuit against cancellation. And then the Democrats decided, well, we're not going to stop fighting, right? We're going to come out with a SAVE plan. And what happened is Republicans did not do nearly as well as they thought they would in the midterms, right? Everyone was predicting a red wave, and then it didn't even happen. It was like a red mirage or red sort of small tide or something. I mean, so, you know, they barely won the House and they didn't even take the Senate, I believe, right? In 2022. So there was just, it was quite shocking there that you had this cancellation case that was pending and you had the SAVE plan come out and then nobody tried to block the SAVE plan. So they implemented the SAVE plan while that cancellation case was being decided. Now, remember that the pause actually lasts all the way until like September 2023, I think. Even after the pause, they did the Fresh Start program and they extended the IDR recertification date so much. And they made sure that there was essentially no consequences to non-payment of loans either. When you have no consequences to non-payment of loans, a lot of people are not going to pay because there's no consequences, right? It's just rational. So if you, a lot of millions of people effectively were just not paying because they didn't have to during the Biden administration because of protections for consumers. And then the SAVE plan, when it came out, one thing that was interesting with that IDR recertification date that kept getting pushed, the majority of people on the SAVE plan qualified for a $0 a month payment and 0% interest because of the $0 a month payment. Like literally the majority of people on the SAVE plan, which was, that's pretty shocking, right? And the only part that was not early implemented was the 5% of income for undergrad loans. What happened with all this is finally in 2023 in the fall, the student loan pause ends. And that, you know, kind of ended with sort of a deal, I think, with the congressional Republicans to avoid a government shutdown. That was part of the things that they would trade it on, is ending the student loan pause in exchange for them not shutting down the government. So that was one of the things, I think, that the way that it ended. And I remember for us, for me personally as a company, when that student loan pause finally did end, it was insanely stressful for me, because in 2022, when they said the student loans were going to end, or the pause was going to end for months, we tried to like get ready staffing wise to help people. And then they like last second yanked it. And then it's like, oh gosh, how do I, you know, protect folks' jobs and stuff? Like it was really difficult. And then in the fall of 2023, when they ended the pause, we tried to help people. We tried to staff up on the consultant side of things. And then, you know, the demand was insane. We couldn't help everybody. That was just really difficult. The good news is we made it through that. And a lot of those consultants that we hired ended up becoming financial planners, actually, with SLP Wealth. And they're really great. So I'm glad that all that happened the way that it did. But gosh, it was very stressful having really trying to help people as much as we could with all that demand just being jammed into like a very short window there when the pause did end. Now, when that save plan came out, I was, again, kind of surprised that nobody decided to sue, to block it right away. When that cancellation program got struck down, one of the things about the save plan is they said, the administration said, well, save plan is only going to cost like $100 billion. And right away, I knew that that was not true. I mean, just because you could look at the modeling, you could look at the interest expense, et cetera, and you could tell the Supreme Court was going to strike down cancellation probably. And so then the save plan was going to be a lot more expensive if you took into account those factors. You know, the cancellation program was struck down, but then like nothing happened, right? Like the cancellation program was shot down, and then we were just waiting, and people were making payments on save, and people were making progress in PSLF, and, you know, everything was pretty normal. And then what happened is the final rule for the save plan was supposed to go into effect in July of 2024. And then in late spring of 2024, suddenly all these Republican state AGs, attorneys general, came out of the woodwork and started suing to block the save plan, which was really also shocking to me. I did not see that coming, because the save plan, you know, had been left alone pretty much for about a year. Suddenly, all of a sudden, they had a problem with it. Why? Again, I think going into a presidential election year, the thought is that student loan relief and programs are very unpopular with working class type independent voters, perhaps, that didn't go to college. And I think that they viewed it, again, as this wedge issue that they can bring up and bring attention to. And the save plan, when the cancellation was shot down, the save plan cost went from $100 billion to like $400 or $500 billion, right? So, I mean, it did become this major issue with something that would show up on the federal deficit report. And I think that's one of the reasons they sued. And why did they sue the last second? You know, I think political calendar, right? You saw the cancellation lawsuit get filed like right before the midterm elections. Then you saw the save plan lawsuits get filed kind of like right before the 2024 presidential year elections. So I think that a lot of this stuff is just like, it's obviously it's very, very political. You know, student loans were still political when I first started doing this in 2016 during the Obama administration. And then in the Trump administration, you know, a lot of it was sort of like President Obama got a lot of the stuff done at the tail end, like repay and stuff like that. And then Trump just left it all alone, except for the student loan pause, which he was the one that started this executive action student loan kind of stuff. Technically, I think I should say like President Obama started it with pay or repay. He started it in terms of the new income-driven plans he created. And then, you know, Trump is the one that started all this like pandemic student loan stuff, kicking off that student loan pause, which Biden took it to like a next level. Where are we now? One thing that happened, the Biden administration took a lot of the money the Department of Ed had, and they dropped it into cancellation kind of stuff that failed in the courts. And then I remember they also spent a lot of resources on doing things like content creation and blog posts and doing paid ads for folks, like on Facebook ads and things like that. They spent a lot of it on programs that ultimately did not succeed, and then did not have enough money to actually implement a lot of the things that they had promised very quickly. Now, I'm going to say they did an okay job updating payment counts for PSLF waiver and stuff like that. Like they did decent on that. If you're going to give them credit, you should say that, you know, I mean, what did Biden forgive? Something like $170 billion of student loans. So he's by far the most transformational president in terms of getting student loan relief to borrowers that we've ever had. So you have to give them that credit in terms of dollars that have gone out to borrowers. It's been enormous. It's been incredibly beneficial to a lot of people. It's changed a lot of lives for a lot of people. But what has also happened at the same time is if you think about pushing out that IDR recertification, now Biden did to 2025 for a lot of borrowers, they still have not put any requirements to make payments back. So you still can sort of not pay on loans. There was supposed to be consequences, but I think that they might have, you know, kicked those down the road a little bit. And so Trump is certainly going to impose something again to make sure that borrowers start paying or feel pain if they don't. One thing that's kind of shocking, I think, about the 2024 election and student loans in my mind is if you look at a lot of the Democratic sort of like analysts and commentators and stuff like that, a lot of them are absolutely blaming student loan relief as one of the reasons Democrats lost. And they are blaming student loans as a, you know, indication of, hey, the Democratic Party doesn't care about working people anymore. They just care about you if you have a lot of education. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm saying that that's what people are saying. And so what you're seeing with a lot of these moderate Democrats and swing district types of Democrats is a lot more turning against student loan relief and the progressive sort of vision for student loans. I think that that has taken a huge hit with the 2024 elections, with Republicans barely winning the House, winning the Senate, winning the White House. What you have is a trifecta now, and the trifecta can do what it wants. And on student loans, we have, as I recorded this, who knows the way the cabinet picks are moving these days, but you have Linda McMahon, who's very much a, I guess you could say, MAGA loyalist type of person, right? That's very close to Trump personally. And I don't think that they are nearly as going to be nearly as restrained as they were in 2017 on doing things that they want to do on education policy. And there are folks that have ties to, you know, Heritage Foundation, the Project 2025 stuff that have, I've seen some reporting from Politico and some other places that they are circulating ideas of how do we roll back as much of the Biden student loan stuff as we possibly can. So this is definitely a priority for them. This is definitely something that they are coming for Department of Education, absolutely. And this could mean cutting its budget. It could mean gumming up the works. It could mean slow walking things that were promised to borrowers. I do think that borrowers can be fairly confident that the first few months of the administration, work will probably continue towards things like discharging PSLF eligible loans and those sorts of things. Longer term, though, it's very, very uncertain as to what's going to happen. So President Biden has promised reopening the pay and the ICR plans as of like mid-December. His Department of Education is refusing to process IBR applications against the law, right? They don't care. They're not processing IBR applications, even though the law says they're supposed to, and they just don't care. And so this is my frustration with the Biden administration's record on student loans. Again, you have to say, most transformational presidential administration in history for student loan relief, hands down, absolutely. They took a vision for accomplishing relief at the executive level, bypassing Congress in a polarized environment, and that was highly successful for the first year or two. But the problem is I think what happens in politics is when you push and push and push, and then you finally achieve a lot of the stuff you were looking to achieve, the pendulum starts swinging hard the other way. And I think that that pendulum is swinging hard the other way on student loans right now. And so in 2024 and to the next 4 years, I think that you will in general see more of an environment that pushes people to pay back their loans instead of go for forgiveness. Although a lot of folks that listen to our show still need to be going for forgiveness, including the 20 and 25 year variety in the private sector, not just PSLF. But I also think that there are some chances that you will see, quote unquote, student loan pause type thinking applied to the student loan program by Republicans. And one of the examples here is a Republican congressman from New York, I think it was, proposed a bill to make federal student loans 1% interest. Who does that benefit? It would benefit a lot of the people listening to this podcast, right? Professionals, a lot of folks that have lots of education and therefore a lot of loans. And what is always really interesting to me on the student loan side of things is like the student loan pause had a lot of support in the Republican caucus in Congress, a lot of support, even though it was very expensive, even though it was very targeted towards folks that had higher balances and often higher incomes and levels of education, right? And what happened is you had folks with an MD or a dental degree or something got a lot more relief than somebody that was, say, a barista who did a couple years of college and then dropped out and has 10,000 of loans. You know, she got paused interest on 10,000. Meanwhile, a physician got maybe 100, 200,000 of pause payments and interest during the pause, which lasted 3.5 years. So what I think that we might see is, like, you know, if the Republicans continue down this line of reasoning of, like, let's make student loans sort of, let's subsidize the interest, let's try to encourage people to pay it back. You've got a lot of thoughts on things like this College Cost Reduction Act, which is this House GOP bill that came out that was like, let's match contributions people make to principal and eliminate interest accrual. So a lot of this stuff is just not, I think everybody's idea is like, let's just be super generous on loans, but then let's try to achieve all of our own policy priorities, right? So Republicans are trying to go after the quote unquote, you know, woke universities, let's cap loans, let's try to limit new borrowing, let's try to reduce programs, focus on apprenticeships and things like that. Who knows? What I do know is Republicans probably are not going to eliminate the filibuster. So that means that you're going to see a continuation of the IBR and PSLF programs, because those can't be overturned with, you know, out without 60 votes in the Senate, which is good. And, you know, everything else, if you think about what could be changed, well, IDR account adjustment, millions, or maybe not millions, but certainly hundreds of thousands of people consolidated because of that adjustment. Department of Ed probably does not have the stomach to say, we're going to renege on that and not allow that to happen, right? So I think IDR account adjustment is safe because of the political blowback that you would get by, like, promising somebody something that you actually take an irreversible action on and then not getting it. Now, you might say, well, how's that different from cancellation? People made the irreversible decision to not refinance their loans or something. That's a little different. I think that's a little different because you're talking about something that just not doing anything versus actively doing something like consolidating to get the benefits of the IDR account adjustment. I think that that's something that has to get honored because it'd be too chaotic to not honor it. But you have a lot of folks at Department of Ed. You've got all of these progressive folks that were brought in by the Sanders-Warren wing of the party to advocate for borrowers at Department of Ed. All those folks are going to be gone. And you're going to have as a replacement a bunch of folks that are super pro apprenticeships, proprietary schools, that's for-profit schools, skeptical of Department of Ed existing, and you're going to have a lot slower processing of a lot of things. And what does it mean when Biden has promised so many things on student loans and yet never had a plan to implement a lot of it and was sort of gambling that they would win and then have time to do it all? And that gamble failed. So I don't know if this has been cathartic or depressing or interesting, or I'm not sure. But I mean, so I just wanted to kind of talk through 4 years of the Biden administration's incredibly successful and chaotic and frustrating and joyful for many borrowers and just confounding record on student loans. It is certainly consequential, that there's no doubt there. And I think that one thing we might see in a second Trump administration is, you know, how much do they really care about student loans? And if you see sort of a slow march on student loan policy, if you kind of see a lackadaisical approach, if you see just like slow walking borrower defense applications and, you know, no urgency around student loan policy, I would say for borrowers, that'd be actually a really good thing because it means that a lot of the Biden stuff will probably be implemented. It'll just take a while, right? And then if you see them come right out of the gate, issuing a bunch of student loan specific regs, you're making a bunch of announcements to borrowers right away, demanding payments immediately and saying, you know, no more student loan pause through the back door with pushing out the IDR recertification and not having collections penalties. If you see them like immediately reverse all this stuff, if you see them say, hey, no pay in ICR, we're shutting those down, what we will find out in the first month will be a lot. In the first 100 days, we'll find out even more. Because anything that happens on student loans, I think we'd probably see a lot of this movement in the first 100 days of the Trump administration. Then it's probably a lot of more continuation of the same. You know, if you have any questions about the current state of student loans, maybe PSLF buyback stuff, forbearance stuff, reopening of pay ICR, what you're waiting around for from your servicer, misinformation your servicer is giving you, or you just need a vent or ask a question, whatever it is, you can go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail and just hit that record button and leave a quick memo for us and we'll feature it on a pod episode in the future. And if you have a question that you think needs a student loan consult, you can go to studentloanplanner.com/book. Thank you all so much for listening to the pod. Have a wonderful rest of your week.